you know, and if you let me do this for three turns, chances are your army's gone.
Horseback scan initiated. I'm picking up a podcast arriving. Wait. Designation: Forge the Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to a vacation episode of Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined by Adam Camilleri.
Evening everybody, hope you're out there enjoying your 10th edition of 40K.
Tanya is up with Play on Tabletop right now. How awesome is that?
Man, she is jet-setting, styling, profiling. She's doing great.
I think that Mini Wargaming Dave, good friend of the show, is also up there. So there are, you know, cool things happening coming from that studio. If you don't already follow them, maybe check it out. And maybe you'll catch a glimpse from people you recognize.
Yeah.
And Red is working. So,
yeah. A busy, multifaceted, multidisciplinary crew you've put together, mate. And you have just gotten back from the Great White North, having your first little excursion up there. That'd be interesting to chat about.
Yeah, I was in Calgary, which is the first time I'd ever been in Canada before, and it was great. I had a fun time. I was up there for GamesCon Canada, which they were hosting at the BMO Center, and the BMO Center is apparently like still under construction. But the areas we were in were really nice.
Pristine, lovely.
Real fancy place. It's right next to a casino, which in that casino actually has a restaurant that is owned by, well, at least I think anyway, by Bret the Hitman Hart from wrestling. So they had wrestling stuff. So we went in there for like one evening, and they were playing a bunch of wrestling stuff.
Foundation?
Yeah. Yeah. It was, there's like a 20-foot poster of him in there. So if he doesn't know it, it's done by a super fan.
Yeah. Nice.
Very cool. So
they got three steaks on the menu. The best there is, the best there was, the best there ever will be. Oh, man. Sorry. That was a hell of a tangent. Sorry. You just set off my preoccupation with silliness. Continue, mate.
That was cool. I mean, I had to check the place out. I ate Tim Horton donuts.
Nice.
I've had them before, but they weren't, like, fresh. Like, someone brought them, like, on a plane to me before. But having them fresh there was nice. It is. I will say the donuts are better than Dunkin' Donuts that people in America has, but only just by much, just by maybe a little bit. And but nowhere near good as Krispy Kreme. Sorry, Canadian listeners. I just call them like I see them.
Yep, fair. I got to say, like, so I got taken there by my good mate, Dickie, and he said, if you came here 10 years ago, this was like the best thing in Canada. Now you're just coming here for tradition. Enjoy.
Well, there's one every two blocks or whatever. There's one right across the street from the hotel.
It really is the Starbucks, Dunkin' Donuts of Canada. We don't have anything of that in Australia. I suppose we do have a lot of McDonald's, or Macca's, as we call it, you know?
I did have McDonald's when I was up there, so they say that the burgers are 100% pure Canadian beef.
There you go.
I don't know that I noticed that much of a difference.
Fair. Did you get any tacos?
I did. No, but they were just like more traditional street tacos. I did. I ate burgers too. I ate like three burgers. And the burgers were good. Like at every place was good. Different styles of burgers. And they were very good.
Thus?
Yeah. So check it out.
Generally impressed?
Yeah. I think though, if you do travel to anything, you got to try to get out and see a little bit of the culture if you can, even if you're going to like a game thing that has you locked in. And, you know, we'll talk a little bit about our adventures because I was doing some demos of 10th. To completely new players or people that were wanting to know some information about the rules that came through, and you were playing some games at 10th, and I definitely want to talk about it. But you know, at this convention where I was at the Games Workshop booth, just basically doing these demos the whole time, still tried to make it a point to get out and see some of the local stuff. I'm glad I got to get a glimpse of it.
Fabulous. Yeah, so I did play a bunch of games over the weekend. I wasn't quite at the coalface of 10th edition. The front lines, as you were, Red would be so proud. Me and the mates got together for some games, just try a bunch of new stuff. I'm pumping the brakes on the competitive side of things. Like, I've got no big events that I'm planning to go to play in, so to speak. But I really want to learn the edition as much as I can. And so I went, I drove about an hour to one of my mates' place and watched and participated in a bunch of games. I spent the weekend before I did the same thing, but I didn't bring any models. I just wanted to watch. I was essentially the guy with the laptop just sitting there with all the indexes open, and the bloke playing would just be like, "Oi, what's this guy do?" And I'd be looking it up. Oh, he does this and this and this. I learned a lot. It was really quite useful. But yeah, I got stuck in a bit last time. There's a big difference between like the best thing in the game at the moment and everything else, which leads me to believe that the game is in a pretty good place, despite what the internet may tell you. Because like we would play the best things we can think of in the game versus each other, and they, you and I see on tabletops across the world at events, somebody gets rolled, somebody gets stomped pretty quickly, especially when you're very new into an edition, you haven't found the ways to, you know, curb your opponent's output or find the things that, you know, won't get you blown up turn one.
And there are some differences too. Like, you might get surprised by when Overwatch can occur or something.
Yes, yes. You might get caught out. You didn't block off a rapid ingress and all of a sudden you lost your home objective for a turn or two. Big, big deals like that. But when we stopped playing the best things versus each other and we just started rolling around and dumping in any units we wanted, really close, really tight games, and I got to say, pretty quick as well. Like some of my mates are into like their 20th game, and they're you know, crunching really hard. I was on like my fourth or fifth game, and I was playing like games of, you know, five rounds, just over 2 hours. And so I was like, wow, this is a much faster game, even this early on. Maybe you're finding something similar. I mean, people at home aren't, and sorry if you guys it's taking you guys a bit longer or whatever, but you know, everyone moves at their own pace, especially when there's so much to digest.
Yeah, we're talking about, like, we're coming from a perspective of, like, match play, event-driven games.
Of course,
like,
yeah.
can we muscle through a game in less than 3 hours or get to a natural conclusion?
Correct.
And it seems to be you're finding it, yes.
Yeah, well, so there's been a bit of an internal, shifting of the goalposts, so to speak. There was huge incentives in 8th and 9th edition to be charging, closing distance, because that was how you were going to take objectives off your opponent. You were going to wrap, you were going to trap, you were going to shut down outputs. You were going to make a noticeable difference in what your opponent could do to you by closing the gap on them. There isn't that much of it going on in 10th edition, but it's still a very important part of the game. And what that really has done is that means that we have a lot more of some of the things we loved about 6th and 7th edition, establishing a really strong firing arc, making sure you can get an angle past a ruin down into their backfield when you need to, putting the right things in reserve, in strategic reserve and deep strike to, you know, keep your opponent having to screen certain portions of the table rather than closing the gaps and stuff like that. Rather than, because essentially, like, you would have whole armies, case in point, Paul, Blood Angels, you'd have whole armies where the premise was, even if I can't kill you, I will shut you down, and I will shut you down on your side of the table, leaving my side unmolested, and I can keep scoring my points. Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah. And I think we're seeing, you know, possibly a shift towards, you know, the fewer of those types of units and more to the shooting game, more into figuring out the towering business, and you know, still in very early days. Nobody has this solved yet, by the way, but there is a lot of people that think they do, but that's one of the brilliant things of an ecosystem, and also what the brilliant thing of coming up of this weekend is we're going to have some of the first major brand new edition tournaments.
People are not slacking on this. There's, I think, 350 plus player events just in Australia this coming weekend, let alone the same in, you know, North America, a couple in Canada, a bunch in Europe. It's going to be a great edition. So was it halfway through 9th when Games Workshop started running their open series?
Yep, that sounds about right.
Yeah, really, really excited to see what GW can do with a full, you know, a full edition, a full 3 years of active support, you know, making up, doing all those things. Mm-hmm. Really exciting.
In Tacoma in a couple of weeks, it'll be over, you know, 500-person player event.
Dude. Oh, man, it's wild.
I'm really looking forward to it. I will be there.
Now, I have to tell you something in secret. I'm really glad Red isn't here. Really glad he's not. Like, you have no idea. I maybe wouldn't even be bringing this up if he was here, but I got the app.
Okay. I'm glad. And I'll tell you, so doing the demos, and I'm not saying we played full games. We did play. Sometimes I would just walk people through the combat or the shooting, or maybe we play for a couple of different objectives on the table to show the scenario side of things, depending on how many people were there at the time and how much time I thought they let me know that they had to go through some of the stuff. And the app, the brand new app, and if you haven't gotten already or were hesitant because of the old app, don't walk, run to get the new app because it is wonderful. It's easy to use. The stats are all there. At a couple of clicks away, you have any questions about what a unit does, it's all right there at your fingertips.
Do you know how I said that previous weekend? So the first weekend I did testing games, we had to have essentially a man on a computer with every document open at the same time. And so for the two tables, so we had five gentlemen in attendance, five players in attendance. One had to be sitting on the computer so they could yell out how everyone's rules worked, because they're like, what does my intercessors do? How many attacks they go in combat? Blah, 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 all this stuff. Yeah.
Sometimes a little rule on the we'll talk about that in a minute, not to jump in, but there are the units that you are accustomed to how they used to behave now sometimes have a little bonus.
Yes. But between that first testing weekend and the second one, the app came out, and the no one was required to sit on any computers for the second weekend. It was really quite crazy. It's really good. I don't know how much it's going to cost when it comes out, but I'm probably going to pay it. So, G-Dub, well done. That is a really good digital product, and probably and I don't want to say it's the first one that they've done that's been of a really high quality and extremely user friendly and extremely useful to the player. Of every level, of every description, but it's the first one I've interacted with where I've been genuinely impressed. And if there's anybody listening to this from G-Dub, pat yourselves on the back. You guys did a phenomenal job with that.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And yeah, going through with new players sometimes was great to show them, you know, like, hey, this is the unit, this is what stats do, this is how you make an army list real quick if you're trying to figure out stuff. And it already has the combat patrol stuff in there.
Yes, it's got most of what you need to play a game.
Yeah. I'm talking for brand new players, you know, the combat patrols are now, you know, able to battle against each other, and they're fairly balanced, you know, at least the ideas that they're balanced against each other. So it's a kind of another way to get into the game for new players.
Absolutely. I mean, and just to, like, I'm just trying to put myself in the shoes of the new player, just sitting there, like, watching TV of an evening with your app open and being like, I wonder what a Death Watch veteran does. And just, like, typing in Death Watch veteran, and it just brings up everything that you need to know, like all the war gear, all the things, all the rules, all the points. It's really well done.
Over the course of this last weekend, also let me say thanks to all the listeners that came by and said hello or recognized my voice or something, you know, at the event, because it was awesome to meet so many people. And, well, it was the first year of that convention, but I had a good time, and there were lots of people there, and it's cool to run into fans of the show and, you know, expose new people to Warhammer. Kill Team Live was there. I actually got to fill in. I got to play on that this time. There was, I just finished up what I was doing over in the vendor hall and was basically just kind of killing time till everyone else got done in the Kill Team Live. And some folks that I knew needed an extra player. Like, well, of course, I'll jump in.
Nice.
Kill Team Live with you.
Take some scalps.
Yeah, we rocked it.
Nice.
Well, the game's an objective-based game. You are playing, you know, with laser taggers. You know, you are, you know, going around. But, you know, as it is, when you have a team of people versus another team of people who this is the first time they've ever played, you know, it can be a bit random. But the team that we were on, I did not do this, by the way. I was, you know, there just to be a ringer or whatever. They organized very quickly, and they began to take objectives systematically like you would in a normal game of Kill Team, which that game is actually meant to replicate. So they did a great job.
They did a great job.
Yes. But Kill Team Live is one of those experiences that if you haven't done it before, do it. I know we mentioned it in the last episode, but it was cool to see so many people just go through it and have a blast. And at this convention, there were a lot of experiences. Like I did an escape room.
Nice.
They had a mobile escape room. Not Warhammer related. This was completely and totally Warhammer related. This was just another company that had one out there in the hall. And when I was taking a break and kind of roaming the area, got in there and did an escape room.
Mate, well, you have just unlocked a whole new tangent. Bret Hart restaurant, get out of the way. Warhammer-based escape rooms. Wow, what an
there
idea.
Are those in Nottingham.
Yes, I think this is what I'm coming to. But why doesn't G-Dub have one? They take that around like they do with the Kill Team Live. They could have a mobile one.
Now that we know people and know this exists, you know, maybe we'll see what we can do. we'll mention it to some people that may have, you know, aligned into that. But I will say that the one in like Games Workshop home base, I hear is pretty cool. I've not been through it. I haven't been able to get through over there.
Do you know what the theme is?
I don't. No, I know nothing about it. Yeah. Nor do I want to. I just know I would love to do it. I want to go there and do
Me
it.
Too. Me too.
But if you've heard me talk about it on some other things before, myself and Tech Priest Warner went into the escape room and did escape. We actually did escape.
Well done.
Yeah. With a caveat, it was meant for four people. We went through with just the two of us, and we did overshoot it by, I don't know, 45 seconds.
Dude, that's impressive.
So we didn't actually escape before the 15-minute timer ran out. We needed like 15 extra seconds. But the person did not come and tell us we were done, so we just continued to solve the puzzle.
Love it.
It took a few extra seconds, but okay, whatever. We had the door open by the time I get back, but it was fun. Those types of experiences you don't see at every convention, so it was kind of neat to see him there. Had a good time, and I guess I took us on a bit of a tangent of talking about Warhammer the New Edition. But it was really Games Workshop also had the paint and take there, so you could come and paint a miniature and then take it with you. I mean, I guess the name says.
What models do they have you paint?
It's either a Stormcast or a Space Marine. You could choose.
So, is it a Primaris Marine?
It is, yeah.
So, like, theoretically, how many do you think I could get away with if I had a series of disguises, hats, fake mustaches?
You could probably get a squad.
You reckon you could get a squad? I was about to ask, like, is anybody, like, just...
like a five-man squad? Yeah, you could probably get
away with
that. Over the course of 2 days. So... I don't think there's like a time limit. There's put out, I don't know, must have been 50, 60 open seats.
Hmm.
And people could just come through, and it was always full. And the folks over there did such a good job and being so patient with people and making sure let people have whatever color they wanted to use. You weren't just set, with a predefined, here's your two colors, make the best of it. And they were giving some tips and tutorials on how to use the stuff. Really, it was neat. I'd poke my head around the corner every now and then to see every chair filled up, and then people would come walking through the booth with their miniatures in hand, I was very proud of it. It was very nice to see. And if you'd never painted before or were just getting into the hobby, it was kind of cool to go in and kind of experience that part of it over there before you committed if you were curious.
Hmm.
So I dig
What's it. Next? So just Tacoma?
Tacoma's next, yeah. That's the first... U.S. Open Series that is full-on new edition.
And exciting.
Looking forward to see it. So over this past weekend, some players at small tournaments did fire off, and there's a lot of talk about towering knights and how the towering rule works. Maybe you and I could go through that a little bit.
Sure. So towering has become
Hang on.
Oh, I was ready to launch. Sorry, man.
No, let's take a quick break. Then we'll come back and talk about towering. Get a quick word from our sponsors. And also, I want to give a shout out to the folks that have joined us on Patreon. That means a whole lot. That is actually how we keep these things moving, keep shows getting edited, and continuing to launch content. I know we said this next episode, this would have been the start of season two, but with Tanya and Red not being here, I don't want to launch season two just yet, but it's coming next week if everyone can make it. But everyone is committed. It just didn't work out with the commitments and stuff, but it is coming, and the folks that y'all keep listening and leaving us 5-star reviews and supporting us on Patreon, getting a t-shirt, and supporting our sponsors, that's, again, keeps everything going, and we really appreciate it. Hold tight, 15 seconds, we'll be right back.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey everybody, we are back. Hopefully that was enough time to get over and check out the Patreon. Any tier is a good tier, and occasionally things get released early over there. I don't want to promise that it happens, but it has happened at least once since we have started this process. And we're going to be doing some deep dives into the factions. And we'll be talking about the things and factions on the show and not hiding any of that content, but really getting in deep on some of the stuff that either we plan to play or need some packing in a different setting than this.
Agree. A really great use of people's time, hopefully, to learn a little bit whilst also being thoroughly entertained is the hope.
That is what we hope for. And you know what? We mentioned Tacoma is the next thing, but then right after that, I'm actually going and playing in the ATC, the American Teams Championship.
Yeah, man. Exciting.
Yeah. Got a team representing with the Wrong Way Kids. Looking forward to, you know, basically playing in this edition in a organized play setting, which I haven't gotten to do a lot of recently. But breaking it, you know, the seal here with the new edition. Looking forward to it. I think I'm playing Astra Militarum, but I might play some form of Knights. So this next topic we're going to bring up with the towering, you know, might matter.
It turns out that it does. It turns out, so there was a lot of debate. There wasn't much debate in 8th and 9th edition about which was the strongest keywords you could possibly have on a unit. Fly definitely was the strongest keyword in 8th edition. Infantry, probably the strongest 9th edition. What is it going to be in 10th edition? Could it be towering? I definitely think it's a contender for it out of the gates. But what does towering mean? Yeah. Towering is a keyword that's been given to, I guess, most of the super heavy walkers, as we would call them in ages gone past.
Yeah, so things that are like titanic walkers or large, like, knight-like creatures.
Yeah, notably, like, not on things like Baneblades and, you know, stuff of that ilk, like a grav tank or a tank. Actually, I'll check while we're chatting, I'll check if the Astraeus has towering, but definitely 100% this is on all of your Questorus or larger knights, being, you know, all the way up to Warlord Titans, everything in between. In addition to all those equivalents, you know, should they be, you know, Orcs, Eldari, etc. You want to break down what this actually does?
Yeah, so going into the terrain rules with visibility, models cannot see over or through this terrain feature, i.e. a unit outside of a terrain feature cannot draw a line of sight to a target on the other side of it, even if it would be possible to draw a line of sight to that target through open windows, doors, etc. Aircraft and towering models are exemptions to this. Visibility to and from such models is determined normally, even if this terrain feature is wholly in between them and the observing model. Models can see into this terrain feature normally, and models that are wholly within the terrain feature can see out of it normally. Talk about like enclosed ruins and that kind of stuff with things with footprints.
Yep, so it used to be that you could only be seen by things that could see you through ruins, through windows, through walls, through forests, etc. Things with the obscuring keyword. And let's say I was a superhero. Let's say I was a knight paladin. A lot of the time, the best way to take care of a knight paladin in 9th edition was to set up and deploy in a way that you could see it, but it couldn't see you. And it was a feel bad for people. I know at the start of the edition, I don't know how well the knight player base has adapted to that. I assume they have, because it's been both Imperial and Renegade Knights have been very legitimate factions in 9th edition and hopefully in 10th edition also. It was a bit of a feel bad when you would just be like, well, see this window right here? I'm going to line up 12 Dark Lances to see through this one window. And there's nothing you can do about it. You can't answer this fire. You know, and if you let me do this for 3 turns, chances are your army's gone. Whereas now it's a 2-way street. If you can shoot me, I can shoot you.
Yep. Which I think is better. But there's a lot of, contention out there. Maybe just getting used to it. Maybe it's the volume of knights that you can take. Maybe it's a points thing. I don't know what is kind of rubbing folks the wrong way, other than this is different than it used to be. So that's probably the best place for us to talk about.
So there's a couple of layers to this interaction that is kind of people. So GW have obviously looked at the Knights player base and been like, well, that's an unintended, possibly feel bad interaction. We want to remove that for Knight players. They shouldn't be punished. If they can be shot, they should be able to shoot back. You know, I'm sure if Red was here, he'd give us an allegory like the tracer fire is coming from the building. You're a giant freaking knight. Blow up the building. you know, something to that effect. Is what how I see this going down in my head, at least. What it is now is there's a couple of layers to this. So firstly, a lot of the buildings and ruins and things that we use on the table, we have a lot of L's on a lot of tables. And an L isn't quite what you want against knights, because essentially they walk up to the L, and if their model can see over the L, you are not protected in any way. Even if there's no windows or doors in that L-shaped ruin.
Yeah, they just look at you, draw a line of sight. They're exempt from all this like footprint cover stuff.
So then the game becomes, well, the terrain only hurts the person who's not the knight player. The knight player or the towering player hasn't got any impediments to their fire. Essentially, they can choose to shoot whatever they want to shoot as long as they can move to it or move to an angle where they can legitimately draw a true line of sight. That's really what we're talking about here. We're talking about when you're towering, it's true line of sight. No keywords will interact with your ability to gain and draw and shoot something that you can physically see from your model. And that... The other way that this gets spiky is when you add in things like Overwatch. So usually you'd be like, well, I'm going to crouch. Exactly. This spot on, brother. I'm going to crouch. I'm going to creep along this wall and not be seen by your knight. And therefore, you know, because I'm hidden behind this thing that used to give me cover and I used to be able to hide behind, I am safe and will not get blown up. Whereas now I'm just going to turn one, move advance my knight Valiant into the middle of the table. And if you move within the zip code of this gentleman, you are roasted, toasted marshmallows. Thank you very much for coming. How much you can do about it? Marshmallows? Yeah, we do.
No, not marshmallows. Zip codes.
Oh, we do. We call it, we have a postcode. Yeah, it's the same thing. Yeah.
No, I appreciate you Americanizing it for my benefit.
But yeah, that's one of the interactions that has people a bit miffed on it. I suppose a bit out of sorts because they're like, well, I guess it's fine if they can see me and whatnot, but me getting killed in my turn by your knights when I used to be safe, that might be the one that's getting people a bit, you know, noses out of joint. I still think this is for the best, though. We just need to find ways to mitigate it or find terrain pieces that actually assist.
Yeah, keeping people. Build an extra level on the terrain that you didn't have before.
Spot on.
Call it all. Like, sometimes what we play is the first floor of the ruins are all, like,
line of sight block,
whatever. Maybe the first three floors of the ruins are all blocked out now.
Yeah, agreed. There's also the fact that they can walk over, is it ruins under 5 inches or under 4 inches, under 3? There's a size of terrain piece that they can just walk over. Now, there's a little bit of debate right now, and we're going to have to wait for some rulings and some FAQs. But a lot of the terrain we see on tables, especially at tournaments, they'll be like tiered. They'll like step down. They'll start at like 6 or 7 or 8 inches, 9 inches, and then, you know, they'll have a couple of edges on the L that go step down to a different size. Like they'll be like 3, 4, 5 inches when they taper off, so to speak, you know, in one direction or another, kind of like a pyramid. Mm-hmm. And so can the knights walk over the smaller sections, or does the entire piece have to be of a certain height?
That's a great question. I would actually probably, if I had to rule it, it would be like just as rules is written, they could walk over the smaller piece. But
yeah.
But I think maybe for like some type of balance stuff, maybe it all counts whatever the tallest of the tallest. You know, and that happened, we got that with the obscuring and stuff like that. So it's not even a weird stretch. Of concept.
Exactly right. So we see a lot of L's on competitive tables, and we see some U's as well. So that would be, let's say, like you have a four-sided ruin, but one of the sides of the ruin gets knocked off, and so you've got a U-shaped ruin. Now, a lot of the time, those ones will taper off in one way or another, and so I've seen it happen with knight players as well. They position themselves or they. You think you're safe in the middle of your U, which might not even have any windows or whatever, but because there's like a little craggly bit on the end of it, the knight comes in from strategic reserve and can see you. And so there is a lot of things that need to be clarified with the towering rule. Like, is it any part of the terrain piece being of a size or of a shape or of a thing? And this is just stuff we need to adjust to. Like perfectly said previously, we had to do some big adjustments from 8th edition to 9th edition on the tables that we played to make the game a balanced, enjoyable experience for both players. I feel like that's just what we're going to have to do again.
Yeah, and that conflagration canon, for folks that may not be familiar with the Knight Valiant, is 3d6, strength 8, 1 AP, 2 damage.
Auto-hitting ignores cover.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it also it comes with that Thundercoil Harpoon, which is anti-monster and anti-vehicle 4+, and has devastating wounds.
It's a thing. The platform now, I'm really happy. I'm really happy to see the Valiant relevant because, unfortunately, it's been like the lesser of the two Dominus class knights since the Dominus class knights came out. It's always been the cooler, 100%. It has always been the cooler option, but the Castellan's been better in just about every way until now. And it's time for the Valiant to have their little heyday. I appreciate it.
I painted one in Blood Angel colors. I know that's not a big shock, right? But I did paint.
Yeah,
like, painted knight support for the BA, just in like it went going through like just hobby dry spells kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it's my lucky day.
Yeah, I think so. I think this is your lucky day.
It is red, although the rest of my knights are like blue and all beat up and weathered and stuff, so it would stand out. But you can get away with that with knights, I think.
I think so.
The knights look different. But it is something that you got to be prepared for. I mean, I know that everyone's talking about Eldari and the Fate Dice being the kind of the real big bad right now, and they are. Like there are lots of things that in this game that I don't think we've just fully figured out how to manifest it just yet, yeah. But they're, I like it that there are this many cool things that we can kind of keep uncovering.
Oh, absolutely. Like, essentially, right now, there's, I suppose, three or four things that people are pointing to as, like, these things probably need to be toned down. Fate Dice or Eldar is the obvious one. The interaction between Fate Dice and Devastating Wounds is probably a little too good to exist with everyone else trying to play. Oath of Moments, people point as that as being an erroneous thing. I argue it's actually not as bad as you think, and that the actual culprit is the Desolation Marines and the Indirect Fire, which is the second thing I think we would want to maybe have addressed. And I don't know if you want to pontificate on possible things that they can do, or if that's another show.
We can talk about this, like the things to watch out for. I mean, I think that, yeah, you know, putting them on a second story of a building and then...
Yes, getting extra AP again when you shoot downwards, etc. I do love that rule, by the way. I actually really love what's it called? Advantageous fire is what I think about it in my head. When you when you're like 5 or more inches off the ground and you're shooting down to something on the bottom floor, you get an extra AP. Sick, amazing rule. Really like it. There should be an advantage to a vantage point.
I know we're going. I don't want to go off on a tangent. Whatever we're talking about, you know, we were talking about, you know, a towering and jumping around the Eldar and the Fate Dice. But I think more like, I think we're kind of in the mode right now of, hey, when you go to the game store, be prepared to run into this kind of stuff. Or if you're going to a tournament, there are some big changes out there that weren't. I mean, they're cool. I think they all kind of make. They will be the hallmarks of what this edition is, kind of thing. But it is much different than yesterday.
Agreed. And more than that, I think we're trying to point out. Remember, like, you'd rock up to a table at a ninth edition game, and you'd ask people, "Can you heroic intervene extra? Do you what fights first or fights last do you have? Can you double shoot, double move, all this stuff?" Now it's like, can you auto six anything with devastating wounds? Do you have any indirect fire? Do you have the ability to overwatch more than once? Do stuff like that. And this is the new terms and conditions of the game. And, you know, hopefully Paul and I are bringing you up to speed with some of the new questions you could be asking when you rock up. You're trying to organize a casual game, you know, ask your opponent, do you want to bring any of these things? So that if they do, you can come prepared with something, you know, that can address the level of threat they want to propose.
I like that. Maybe that's the topic of the next show is, like, the four questions to ask your opponent when you get to the table.
That's a good one, yeah. Might be the 40 right now with the edition being so new, but totally good topic.
Like, what is it? Maybe you ask your opponent, did I build my list right? You know?
Yeah. Is this illegal? It's just going to happen, right? Yeah.
Yep. You made me think about or try to figure out what the rule is for the firing positions, but it is like firing down or whatever. I should have grabbed the.
It's fine. I just threw that out on a whim and is what it is. The if I didn't mention, the Astraeus does not have towering.
No, I think it's just the
walkers,
the Valiant and like things of that size, and not even the Valiant, the what you call it, it's the regular old knights,
Questorus knights and bigger is what I've seen. Yeah.
We are going to be running down some of the faction, like what other players are taking at tournaments on the other show that you and I are on called the Warhammer Meta Chasers.
Yeah, man.
And that's with Dustin Hinshaw. And we each and every week we run down what the big tournaments are going to be upcoming for that week. And even if tournaments aren't your thing, we are talking about what people are gravitating to. Like we talk about, we break down the factions that people have chosen to bring to XYZ event. And we analyze the ratios of what they are against the field.
We
talk about what trends are.
Full meta breakdowns of the factions in attendance, and then some of the top players and what they're bringing. And seeing as it's so early in the edition, I'm just going to be pulling out weird stuff that I like the look of, or that is a good example of what people are trying to do with certain factions. But yeah, dude, it's ground zero for 10th edition, like especially from a statistical or an analytical perspective. I can't wait to unpack it.
Yeah, and when a faction like Eldari that have, you really can't go wrong with if you've collected Eldari for a long period of time.
It keeps getting said, doesn't it? Generationally, if you could go back and like tell your younger self to play the one thing that would get like over the ensuing decades would get the biggest percentile wins, I would go back and just be like, yo, craft world Eldar, statistically. whatever it's being called, or maybe, you know, Asuriani, whatever. Yeah, they seem to do pretty well all the time.
Yeah, that's, but see, people have those, like, if you've been a collector for a bit, or even if you had that as an army, you've done something else, this is, you can go back to your collection with something like Eldari and just kind of pull out. You got 2,000 points worth of stuff.
Yeah.
You got 2,000 points worth of stuff.
You're good to go. I mean, yeah. Very few people have been like chucking down 10 Guardians and thought, you know, this is awful.
And above and beyond the factions of what we're, or what we'll talk about that, but, you know, I guess coming back to, you know, what we do on this show is like, above and beyond just the factions, the war gear choices now, are they going to get easier or harder to make?
I think overall easier, maybe harder in the short term, easier in the long term. Should this continue, we may very well, you know, I don't want to assume this is how it's going to be the entire edition. We could have codexes that come in that add war gear points to certain things, but you can, you know, you can take it on two. I think you can easily break it down into two quandaries. The first one is doing the choice that's going to make the unit the most fit for purpose. Like, what is this unit supposed to do? And take the war gear that doubles down on what it does best. And then there's a mathematical equation of what is the most damage and firepower statistical output that I can press, squeeze out of my models. And that's the other quandary. That's the other consideration. And which one you go with, totally up to you.
Yeah. I have done an exhaustive search, and I found a variety of what we will be counts as hunter killer missiles.
Nice.
Some of them are actually bona fide hunter killer missiles. Some of them are like missiles from Forge World planes or something.
Yep. Nice. Nice.
Valkyries and stuff.
And, yep. Valkyries Vendettas. Yeah.
I have not been able to find a sufficient number of like chainsaws for sentinels. So if you haven't seen one of my sentinels around, mind your business.
Surely you can find some eviscerators, mate. Surely.
Chain swords, you know, to their shins or something. Who knows? I'm just saying, be, you know,
generous.
Have some grace. Be generous with people out there in these early stages. I know that some folks, you know, are kind of lamenting the fact that they may not even have the sponsons for their Lehman Russes anymore. I don't know what the answer to that is, but I think that in the short term, it's going to feel like really cool to have all the options available to you. But I'm curious as to think, you know, is it going to kind of get some like decision paralysis as you're going into some of these things? Because some of these units kind of feel like they're pointed to if you took whatever was previously the most expensive thing. And are you going to feel like you now must do that? Or are you going to get into that mindset of what is actually most tactically valid?
Yes, and I suppose that was what I was referring to, like the fit for purpose thing. Like, it's all well and good chucking a laser cannon on everything in your entire army, but if the laser cannon doesn't benefit the unit, like, what it's going to be doing, you know, what's the point? One thing I will lament, the loss of sergeant's uniqueness, I guess, is the one thing of this I will lament, and only that, essentially. Apart from that, everything else I think is fine. With sergeants not getting an extra attack or feeling like they give extra leadership or anything like that, I don't know. It always felt thematic to me to have my little hero sergeants popping off everywhere with their own unique
still have a power weapon or something.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, you can still equip them uniquely. Yeah, nothing like that. It's more like they don't add anything. There's no. I mean, in a Terminator unit, just a strict, regular old Terminator unit, the Terminator sergeant has never been more of a downgrade with his friggin' power sword. Every other bloke's got a chain fist, power fist, thunder hammer, and you've got Mikey with his stabby stick.
He's looking cool though.
Yeah, like, I mean, in previous you'd be like, well, he's got another attack, so he's better if I go into like Termagants than the power fist. He doesn't have any more attacks now. He's got the same amount of attacks, and he used to give the, you know, better leadership to the unit, so that, you know, they'd break or be pinned or harder. But now it doesn't matter. He's just Mikey with his pokey stick when everyone else has got their big old punchy fist.
Yeah, I guess we can kind of. I know we're jumping around a bunch of topics, but I'm hitting the stuff that's different, stuff to watch out for on the table, at least in the get-go. OC, the OC stat, and Battleshock.
I like it. I like it a lot. Battleshock hasn't been crazy impactful in the games that I've played as of yet, but I suppose this is still very early days. Essentially, me and my friends are just blowing each other up pretty quickly, as you heard previously. But dude, I like OC. It's a very elegant change. Then, do you have objective secured? Yep, I got it from this aura. I've got it from a stratagem and a relic. And then, you got to do the math, and then you got to carry the one, and then you got to check where the moon is in the solar solstice, and then you got to see what star sign your opponent is and what they had for breakfast. Turns out they control the objective. Now just count your OCs, compare them. I like it a lot.
Yeah, and then with the battle shock, you know, there's certain armies that kind of force battle shock, and is it you don't remove models anymore? It seems, I don't know, it seems slightly weird.
Yeah, like nothing runs. There's no way to force extra stuff to die. It's cute. I think it's pretty nice. I mean, if you want to talk about GW removing feel bad's element, you ever remember 6th and 7th edition? Someone caused a morale check top of turn 1 on your 500 point battlesuit unit. They rolled an 11. See you later.
Yeah. Fear of the Dark. Games. Love that, by the way. I'm telling you, that was really satisfying sometimes.
as the opponent, as the person who made it happen, you're like, yes, I am a god. And then your opponent's like, well, why did I roll out of bed this morning? Like,
yeah, could have done that on a coin flip or whatever.
Correct. Correct.
But I have not seen it come up to where them being the target, where you can't target them with stratagems.
Has come up?
Yeah, where it's really been that way. But I feel like there's almost like a strategy that some armies can play into.
Yeah, well, definitely like Chaos Knights and that. If it's it's integral to them. Also, Tyranids as well. Like that, love that one turn everyone, like battle shock. Yes, exactly right. Can be really pivotal. I've only had it come up once that I couldn't use a strat when I wanted to. And it turns out it didn't matter anyway, which is what I said before about not being impactful. But I had a unit of Stern Guard, and I was like, I wanted to give these guys ignores cover from one of the Dark Angel stratagems, and I couldn't. And it doesn't matter. I rolled enough sixes on the devastating wounds. I just killed him anyway. But it will come up. Undoubtedly, it will come up eventually.
Yes, and then probably we'll close out with this topic. But the Desolation Marines, do you think they're still going to be as impactful as they were? You mentioned that kind of briefly before.
They are the best thing in the Space Marines index, and probably the best thing in the whole Adeptus Astartes faction right now. I do have some concerns that if they get like a drop kicked into the sun with the nerf bats, so to speak, the rest of the faction drops off pretty hard after that. Like Stern Guard are quite good, Gladiators are quite good, a couple of the Speeders are quite good, etc. But man, like Desolation Marines are super impactful. Even just like chucking five in an Impulsor with, you know, Impulsor's got firing decks, and they just address two units every turn. You know, here's something that I can't see that's getting addressed, and here's something I can see getting addressed, you know, on the go turns, the turns where you want to expose them. They are super impactful and super powerful.
There you go.
Yeah, I do think they're one of the best things in the book.
Got to fight fire with fire. Maybe some indirect may make a comeback for a lot of stuff.
Well, that's right. As soon as you get one really good indirect thing for an army, the indirect arms race just begins. It's really quite cute. But everyone's just like, well, I need to take that to stop them. And then you know, the Marine player's like, well, I've got to take whirlwinds to stop your indirect piece, because my indirect piece is only strength 4 and you're taking support platforms and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then all of a sudden, it's a very cyclical little exchange.
Well, we are here for it. And that is our show this week. Adam, it's been a pleasure to see you and talk Warhammer with you.
Absolute pleasure. My man. Always a good time.
Maybe like this may be like the second show coming up back to back. I got the last one released a little bit early, so this may be following quick up, but that's fine. We can do whatever we want on vacation.
That's right, man. Absolutely.
It's chilling. Well, thanks everybody for listening. Please leave us those 5-star reviews. If you're so inclined, please check us out on Patreon. Check the show notes for the links. And other than that, I think we're going to see you next week.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah. 3 weeks in a row of FTN. Wild.
See you.
Who would have thought?
Spec scan is clear. I think they're gone. For now.